At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
My name is Arielle Kestenbaum, and I am the founder of Fair Meals, a 501c3 status nonprofit that focuses on easy, healthy, and affordable meal solutions for families of all walks of life. On our website, fairmeals.org, you can find free of charge tons of tips, tricks, and recipes that encompass our three pillars of health, ease, and affordability. To help continue to make our programming the best it can be, please consider donating to this amazing initiative at fairmeals.org/donate.
All right. Well, as you can imagine, that was an emotional interview and time spent with Steve Keim, my very good friend down in Phoenix. Again, massively tough, strong football dude through and through, and yet a sensitivity that is beyond admirable. I love the guy, and I wish him all the successes going into the following season and seasons beyond, and I think he's going to continue to hit it right in this league.
Welcome to the GM Journey with Thomas Dimitroff.
As we do, however, we will jump back across the country and head up north and east a little bit to Nashville to visit with J-Rob, or John Robinson, the GM in Nashville, Tennessee Titans. A former New England guy, have a lot of history with John Robinson, have a great deal of respect for him. He is a tough guy as well, football guy through and through, very focused, a good man and a good soul who wants to do it right. He's been given the keys to the kingdom in Tennessee. He's actually, his approach and what the ownership in Tennessee has done for him. And again, John Robinson, having the keys to the kingdom in Tennessee is a very coveted position around the NFL. He does not have to battle with anyone. His owner listens to him and trusts him on all things football. He has a great relationship with Mike Vrabel, but in the end, he is in charge. Check this one out. You will learn a lot about how things should be run in the NFL from an organization perspective.
All right, Nashville, Tennessee, with the kingpin of this city, John Robinson, general manager. Excited about having you. Thanks for joining me. I appreciate you.
Yeah, I appreciate you too. Thanks for having me out here in this behemoth of a rig. Looking forward to chatting.
Well, look, I pulled up and I thought I was a badass with the vehicle here. And then I look over at yours. Man, I'm aspiring to get some wheels and suspension like that. It's a badass. Shelby looks good. Just got it, right?
Yeah, I've had it about 4 or 5 months, and it's good friends over at No Free Shoutouts, Reddick Brown Ford, took care of me, and it's good. I like it.
So let's start by saying, John, think about this. I know you do, and most of us have. 5 years as a general manager, 5 winning seasons, a lot of great things going on, playoff wins, very, very impressive. So when you look at that right now, and you take it all into consideration, how would you define your leadership style?
I try to lead from the front, and never ask anybody to do something that I'm not willing to do myself. I'm extremely hands-on. I am fair, yet can be hard and gruff at times. I try to put my arm around guys, players, coaches, scouts, trainers, video people, everybody that I'm in charge of, and love them up when they need loving, and coach them hard when they need to be coached hard. I feel like that's my responsibility. you know, as the, you know, as the guy leading the football team.
So we were talking last night a little bit about that very fact, leading the football team. So John, you know, you have so much knowledge. You're basically the omnipotent, omniscient guy within the organization. You have a great head coach who knows a lot about football, but doesn't have the background that you have from an administrative standpoint and a team building standpoint. You have an owner who is so well-versed and been raised in this business, but she's fairly new in her role, respectfully, of course. How does that feel? Is that pressure packed for you?
Yeah, I mean, to a degree, but we have great conversations. All three of us, we're all on the same page with the direction of Amy's football team, and she's extremely instinctive. And she's done an outstanding job over the last 5 years after becoming the controlling owner of changing the direction of the football team and empowering me and Mike to make decisions for the football team. And that makes, you know, Mike and I talk about it all the time, the liberties that she gives us to do our job. We're extremely blessed to have that, have this opportunity.
The liberties to do your job, the keys to the kingdom, so to speak. Yes, it's her building and it's her organization, but you guys are empowered. And the key to the communication is it all about candor? Is it all about being direct? If you have something, even if it's tough, even if it's in a tough spot to deliver, do you still feel very comfortable because you know that's your role with her?
I felt like that from the first time I met her on my interview, like that she was someone that I could pick the phone up and call and have those hard conversations. And the feeling was mutual on her side as well, that she could pick the phone up and call me and say, you know, I don't like this, John, we need to fix this. And that I was going to do everything in my power and talking through the situation to fix what she thought needed to be fixed.
So this was a conversation that came up the other day with Howie Roseman and a couple other general managers. And we were saying how important it is to make sure that you are as straightforward with your owner as possible. It's very important even at the kickoff of the job and the relationship. I look back on it now and I think if I ever do interview again or if I'm ever advising someone, I would say go into that meeting with that owner and be very, very direct about what you are as a person, what you expect, and obviously the owner to do the same thing with you so that there's no uncertainties and you're not getting into something that's kind of glossed over. Right, you kick it off with a really good, firm understanding, and of course, you guys did. It seems like that's a special spot.
Yeah, and it was really cool. Within the first, 15, 20 minutes of the interview, I felt like that we could have those conversations, and that's what it is. You know, it's not like you're going to your manual and you're going, okay, Amy, on Appendix A.143, we're going to do X, Y, Z. If this, we're going to flip over to Addendum 4.2.1 and do this. That's not how pro football works. Right. So it's those conversations. It's those organic conversations, mm-hmm. authenticity, transparency, whatever you want to tag it. She has a football team and a business to run. We're in the sports entertainment industry. We're trying to entertain fans here locally, worldwide, nationally. And my job is to put a product on the field, and we got to have those transparent, authentic conversations to put the best product out there possible.
So you guys obviously have a really good working relationship. The building is operating well. Who, when you look back and you think about everything that you learned, you know, coming into the GM role, who was your most sort of influential football leader regarding leadership and team building?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's probably not one, person per se, because there's no, there's no perfect person. There's only one man that's perfect that ever walked this earth. But there's a lot of people. You know, I think my dad and my mom, not so much on football, but mm-hmm. just how to be real, how to be myself, how to work hard, roll up your sleeves. I mean, my dad worked overtime and he'd come home and he'd feed cows and do all that. And so that work ethic was instilled there. And then I'd say when I got to the NFL, it was Coach Belichick in New England. Just, excuse me, not so much conversations with him, but just watching how he led the football team. Scott Pioli, Jason Light, yourself, all of you guys, just watching you, how you interacted with the personnel staff, you know, how Bill and Scott managed the department. And there's some things that I really liked that they did, and there's some things that I didn't like that they did. And I tried to take and kind of build my, you know, my library of how, if ever placed in the position, I would like to run a football team.
So you and I both experienced that because we were in New England and we saw, to your point, we saw all that was good and we saw the aspects that weren't our personalities. And I often say that, right? I'm going to have to ask you this question. You know, everyone always asks, why did you excel versus a number of the other people that left the Patriot paradigm and you know, Bill's tutelage and approach? Why do you think you have excelled?
Well, I think I tried to be myself. I didn't try to be Bill, you know, for lack of a better term. There's only one guy that can do it that way. And in my opinion, he's the greatest coach to ever coach the game and extremely intelligent. Still consider him a good friend. And he taught me a lot in discussions and in, you know, just watching him. But he's his own personality and you have to be your own person. Otherwise, you know, you're kind of just faking it and guys see through that. Players see through that. Coaches see through that. Staff sees through that. You've got to be you. You've got to be authentic. You've got to be genuine with those, you know, with those that you manage.
So this is usually when I step back and start talking about my history with, you know, guys like yourself, and we go way back. I mean, we think about that, and you think about, man, all of a sudden it's that many years later, and we've learned so much and grown so much. We've had our asses kicked along the way, and we've you know, thrived at times, and obviously you're thriving now, and everything is like in a really good spot. When you look back at growing through the ranks, because you were that, you've experienced it at every level. It's something that I've always been proud about. I mean, some people, you know, get there in a circuitous way. You and I did it the way that, you know, maybe that's what we expected to do it, right? You knew how it was to be rank order. You knew how it was to be mid-man. And then you knew how it was to take the reins and start growing all the way towards where you are right now. If you were to advise a group of rising executives on like one strong or two strong salient points about how to approach, you know, leadership as you're coming up through the ranks, what would you suggest?
I think that, you coming back to the previous question, you have to have your own style. Like, you got to be you. If you try to do it the way I do it, like, then that's not really authentic. And there's going to be tough times, like, in whatever facet that, you know, you're at in your career. As you alluded to, I went from a, you know, graduate assistant making $500 a month to, as a coach, to you know, running the roads as a scout. And that first year scouting, it was so different for me from coaching. Like, I almost quit a couple times because it was hard. And but I stayed the course, and it afforded me the opportunities, and I was able to learn and grow, and here I am now.
So we know how important it is as you grow, you learn, you back to the point of seeing a lot of really talented football coaches and the relationship that Scott Pioli had with Bill Belichick. You've seen, you know, other coaches come together with management as you were watching it, and now you're in that spot. And you're now dealing with a really strong-minded, intelligent, opinionated head coach, and I say that respectfully. He's got a presence about him. How do you navigate that and keep your relationship thriving as it is? Because it seems from where we are, it's really operating well. Again, if you were to just provide advice, how do you do that with a strong head coach? And obviously, you being the omnipotent man in the building, how does that all work?
I think you have to be patient. There are things that tick Mike off. There's things that tick me off. Patience, allow cooler heads to prevail. I think that's important. I think it's transparency between myself and him that at the end of the day, we're going to do what's best for the football team. There's nothing more important than the team.
Okay, let's just talk again about transparency, because sometimes that can be complicated, right? There are times I was told by a close friend of mine and a person I think you know as well, R.C. Buford with the Spurs, who was just so well renowned for his leadership ability. And early on, he would tell me, like, Thomas, don't just, you know, turn on the fire hose with all of this transparency. There's a nice fine line there, though, right? You obviously have a really good feel. You always have been very intuitive and together and streamlined on a lot of your approaches, even back from when we all worked together. Again, navigating that is not that easy all the time. When you're trying, you know, again, to your point, when you have a head coach who has some strong beliefs and you do, where do you draw the line with transparency? Is that something from situation to situation, it's about awareness for you?
Yeah, it's really, I mean, it's instinct and feel for the situation, whatever it may be. It's timing, you know, knowing when to approach and talk about this or talk about that, or, hey, let me just kind of let that kind of simmer for a little bit and I'll circle back on it. You know, I know when he's prepping for squad meeting in the morning, I'm not going to go in there 10 minutes before and go over roster stuff. Like, he's trying to get his mind right for the squad meeting to address the team. So just knowing and having a feel when to approach, it's, you know, it's no different than, you know, a basketball player knowing when to take the shot or, you know, quarterback knowing when to throw the ball to this guy or that guy. It's just this instincts and foot feel that you know, you either got it or you don't.
That's right. Well, you obviously have it. So, okay, you have final football say on what we call 53, for those who don't know. And having 53 is final roster decision-making ability, which is important. That's your ultimate responsibility as well. Again, another thing that is sometimes a bone of contention in this league between GMs and head coaches. Sometimes head coaches get it, other times GMs get it. If you were to advise humbly a group of owners who are looking for your advice on the best way to construct that at the top, what would you share with them?
I think that it's important that the owner hire the, you know, a GM and empower them, make sure that they're competent enough to have control over that. But I also think it's on the general manager to have those conversations with the head coach, because, you know, Mike has say on the roster. Like, he's the one that coaches these guys. And I value his opinion greatly, because I'm not in the meetings rooms with these guys. I might see them out on the practice field. You know, he's a roster bubble guy, or maybe he's a practice squad guy, and he moves around pretty good. He's a pretty good athlete. He's got pretty good strength. And you're like, but in the meeting room, he can't pick it up, and he's you know, falling asleep. I don't see those things in the meeting room, so I rely on his, you know, his input when making those decisions. So, but empower the general manager. We're fortunate that that's what Amy believes in. You're in charge of the roster. That's what I pay you to do. And Mike's charge is to coach a football team.
Okay, so we know that the league has made strides in salaries and bridging the gap. Again, another topic that we talk about within the league, bridging the gap between the general manager's salary and the head coaching salary. It's been a discussion for many, many years. It's narrowing, but the gap is still significant. Do you believe in today's NFL that gap between those two salaries and positions is still justifiable given everything on our plates, your plates as general managers?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the actual, you know, prime gap is, but, you know, I know the head coaches, I mean, they have to talk to the media three or four times a week. The decisions that they make for, you know, now 17 games, you know, those are extremely impactful on the outcome of the season. So there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of responsibility on head coaches, and the good ones, you know, that's why they're compensated where they are. But to your point, you know, the GMs, it's the behind the scenes work. It's the construction of the roster. It's managing, you know, the support staffs, the video staffs, the training staffs, you know, player engagement, all of those staffs and scouting staff in particular. I mean, you're managing those people, and you're trying to craft a team and a staff that's going to help you win. And there's a lot of pressure put on it.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
So let's move from that topic, but stay in the coaching realm for a minute. What is your understanding, belief, and approach to helping your head coach put together an adept, very focused coaching staff? Because you and I both know, yes, the head coach is the number one on as far as a coach goes, but there better be some very talented coordinators and position coaches that really hone in on their worlds. How do you put that together? How involved are you in the construction of it? What are your like really, really sort of must-haves when you're putting together a coaching staff along with Mike?
Yeah, I think that, and that's something that, you know, after every season we sit down and talk through the, you know, his assistant coaches and, mm-hmm. you know, my take on those guys. He wants to hear my opinion. Because you're right. I mean, he can't be in every single position room or be at every drill during practice. Mike does a great job of floating around to different position rooms. He coaches every position during practice. You know, he floats around and coaches them. But he has to empower those coaches to instill and coach the philosophies, the techniques, the plays, whatever we're trying to do to help us win football games. So he values my input on, you know, on his staff. But we believe in being loyal to him as a coach, to us as an organization. And knowing that it's never going to be perfect. And that's mm-hmm. the same thing that we do with our, you know, in the scouting staff. You know, each area scout, they have their area. They've got to be experts in that area. You know, just like the assistant coaches should be experts at their position. You know, try to find every single detail to help the players. The area scouts got to try to uncover every detail about the players when we're presenting for the draft.
So that's a good point. And it's with all due respect, and yet it's natural when we talk about loyalty. Loyalty is important on your side when you're putting together mm-hmm. your ops side and all your scouting department, et cetera, et cetera. And Mike, of course, on the coaching side, and yet they both come together because they're yours ultimately, meaning, you know, the organization is all encompassing for you. How do you work with Mike, again, respectfully, to dissuade him from being too focused on the loyalty element? And that's complicated, right? We know as coaches,
sure.
you need to have your right guys around you. But sometimes, call it the way it is, and I'm not saying in your situation, but in the league we've seen it, where sometimes head coaches can be really focused on their loyal myrmidons, so to speak, who are all about loyalty, and they may not be the best coach for that position. Do you have a thought on that, on how you approach? Is it just sharing with Mike your feelings about A, B, or C coach and then moving on?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, he's been great about including me whenever we had to interview somebody, no different than a draft prospect or a free agent when we get a chance to talk to those guys, mm-hmm. Get a feel for how we think they will fit the football team. Mm-hmm. And I'm not as versed in, you know, the X's or O's that he's going to put them through in the discussion, but it's kind of getting a feel for, you know, how are they going to present to the players? Like, what are they going to be like in the building? Because all that stuff's important. And, you know, I'll talk to anybody that we interview and I'll give my opinion. And at the end of the day, we think we have a little bit of patience. Mm-hmm. We don't make quick, rash judgment decisions. And we try to do what's best for, you know, the staff and ultimately the team. But valued input from me, and I do the same thing, you know, on the scouting side.
When you say you do the same thing on the scouting side, it's valuing Mike's opinion. He may have interaction over the years with someone. He may have a feeling about someone on your staff, right?
Yep.
That's not either living up or who is thriving that he would share with you, and you obviously value that. Speaking of your scouting staff, you have an adept scouting staff as well. You've taken a lot of interest in putting together what you feel is one of the best staffs out there. You have some very talented people. I know them, obviously, being around this league a long time. With the success of this team, and as you continue to thrive, so to speak, you know, you run the risk of losing some very talented people. We went through that watching while we were in it in New England, but watching from afar.
Yep.
And it's complicated. What's your philosophy and approach on succession planning?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, you've got to be ready, just like on the coaching staff. You know, it's we've lost two offensive coordinators the last 2 years, and you know, Matt LaFleur is a head coach of the Packers, and Arthur's now the head coach in Atlanta, and you know, Todd Downing is now our offensive coordinator. So you've got to groom somebody and kind of have that person ready, and that's an approach that I try to take too, is you know, try to have someone in house, because it's, they know your system, they know how I operate, they know how I manage, they know what I like and what sets me off, and working with them on a daily basis, if you can have somebody in house and you try to promote with from within, then it also gives, you know, the other people on your staff is like, well, I'm not going down a one-way street here. There is opportunity for me to, you know, go and grow here within this organization. And I try to, you know, those guys, whether it's Ryan Cowden, mm-hmm. who interviewed with Washington, he interviewed with Kansas City a couple years ago, Monty Austin-Ford interviewed with Cleveland last year, he interviewed with Carolina this past season for their GM jobs. I try to pass on, you know, what I can help them with to go get the jobs, because I want those guys to have that opportunity, and then I want, you know, the guys underneath them to grow and ascend into, you know, more prominent roles.
Speaking of growing and ascending within that department, what's your philosophy on transparency with the mid-management group, the department heads, the ones that you are looking to help, kind of the next wave? How much do you share the good, bad, and the ugly, the deal's gone bad, the deal's gone good, the minutia, and some of the stuff that might be a little bit more private? Are you open about that, or does it come down to what we learned in New England? We had some strong, you know, individual voices, of course, Scott and Bill, of course.
Yep.
When I was in Atlanta, I felt very strongly about that. I had some guys around me I had a lot of trust, you know, in early on, especially with Les Snead and Dave Caldwell, and I shared a lot early. But how do you feel about that?
I think it's a case-by-case basis. You know, I think that if it's something that's, you know, pretty needs to be buttoned up, you know, there'll be myself and Mike and Amy certainly will know. You know, but I try to give a general sense of the direction and maybe some of the decisions that may be coming down the pike, mm-hmm. With, you know, everyone in our staff. That mid-management group, as you alluded to, so that they can be thinking too, because I want and value their opinion back on, you know, some of those decisions and how that might affect the team.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that goes on, and that whole learning side, right? I mean, 5 years in, you're probably at a spot where, as you alluded to earlier, we all want to continue to mentor and help give back, right? Give back to the people you care for, give back to the sport. So you're doing that by educating people, and sometimes you have to draw the line of what you can share. And you might not share it right at that moment, right? It may be 3 months down the road, you may be addressing something. Hey, everyone, here's what went down there, which I find a fascinating way to continue to educate people. Which leads into, you make some big moves. You have an aggressive side, and you will go after what you believe you need for this organization, you and Mike, but ultimately, that's your job, acquisitions, trades. You made a big, big trade recently for Julio Jones. Could lead into what I was just asking. How much were other people involved, or did you keep that very tight knit in this situation between you, Mike and Amy, and then share with people down the road? That's one part of the question. The other part is, what is your stance ultimately on aggressive play, not playmaking, but deal making, and approach to, you know, building the team?
Yeah, the first part of the question, it was, once we kind of had gotten wind that Julio may be available, we started and I asked, you know, several on our staff to watch the film and see where it was at. I wanted to know what their evaluation was on the player and how he would fit. Same thing with some of the coaches, you know, the coaches. Asked those guys to watch him and see how, you know, they could integrate him into the offense. Certainly Mike and I watched him. And then, you know, I'd say as it intensified, it was really more just me, Mike, and Amy talking through, know, the compensation and trying to figure out what that was, you know, going to be to acquire him, and ultimately, you know, my decision to pull the trigger. As it relates to the balance of deal making, you know, I don't think you can be frivolous. Mm-hmm. You can't be cavalier and treat the team that way. But you know, we joke around the office, shoot or shoot. And when you got something that you think is going to help the team, you shoot. Like mm-hmm. you you don't double back. You don't question yourself. Mm-hmm. Stand tall. You make the decision. You ride with it.
That idea of when you're well thought out and you're prepared, prepare in times of peace, be less in times of war. That whole idea. You guys, of course, knowing you, you're very well thought out. So when you make that aggressive move, you go for it.
As your point, when you've got a well thought out process, mm-hmm. You've vetted out the decision, and you're ready to trigger, you trigger.
I think that's one of the things that I feel like at times the fan base doesn't understand, right? They may have judgment and pass judgment on moves that are made within, you know, teams and the team building. I've, you know, obviously sometimes read it on your, you know, within your own accounts, but I see it now that I'm out of this and I'm reading a lot more and watching it from different levels around different cities and opinions, and I'm thinking, wow, there are some really intelligent people in roles that you have who think things through. They may not always work. We know that. This isn't an exact science. But again, to have the balls to do what you need to do the best things you need to do for your organization. You and I could sit here and talk ad nauseum about some of the moves that were made this offseason in first round quarterbacks. That is a tough, ballsy move by some of our close friends and Jason Light, Ryan Pace, Howie Roseman, and guys like that are making really complicated moves, but ultimately are doing what they feel is the best for the organization.
Yeah, they've vetted it out internally with their staffs, and you know, every roster is constructed differently. And you know, they talk it through with the ownership, and at the end of the day, they got to do what they think is best for their football team.
Right. You're a again, thoughtful, intelligent, insightful person. I'm curious to get your opinion on what are you most encouraged about regarding the NFL over the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, I think it's growing. In my opinion, it's the top dog in sports. Like the amount of coverage that the NFL draft gets. I mean, right across the river over here, there was 100,000 people watching guys get their names called and walk across the stage.
Yeah.
Like the amount of excitement that's around NFL football and how much that, you know, drives part of our society, sports. Mm-hmm. And to be a part of that, to be one of 32 dudes that, you know, is right in the fire on that. It's fun. It's exciting. You know, personally here for us, there's a lot of cool things on the horizon, you know, where we're sitting now, to try to develop this, you know, this area, to really make this, I mean, it's a destination city anyway, but to really kind of put our stamp on the city, with the Titans here, it's pretty cool what's coming up.
Yeah, I think the league is making some really cool strides in a lot of different areas. We could go on and on about it in so many different ways. So conversely, over the next 5 to 10 years, what's most unnerving or concerning for you regarding the league?
Well, I think that with the growth, and I'm not saying that, you know, much money is generated with the games and TV deals and all that. It's just being able to manage, you know, salary caps and player salaries as those continue to grow. That's one of the harder parts of my job, is just looking and projecting out the future of the football team, and you know, having to make those hard decisions. We have to do it every spring. Mm-hmm. It wasn't hard to make decisions when I first got here, because there's a reason why we had the first overall pick. You know, there was a lot of turnover mm-hmm. that needed to happen on the roster. But now I feel like that we've bolstered the roster, and it makes my job harder, which is what it's supposed to be. To make those tough decisions and manage those salaries and the cap and fit it all together and still try to put a winning product on the field.
We often talk about making sure a lot of us who are kind of in our years, you know, been in it for almost 20 years beyond a lot of us, and we think about the sanctity of this sport, right? Does that concern you? Do you want to make sure that you're always understanding the movement forward from a digital standpoint to marketing to performance to emerging technology and where we are with analytics. Is there a nice fine line on being on the front end of the curve in your mind? Do you think that's your responsibility to make sure that you're open-minded to it? However, you're still very cognizant of not getting over your skis, so to speak.
Yeah, and that's one thing, you know, with social media and the digital age and everything is so, you know, sometimes it drives me crazy with all the stuff that gets set out there and everybody's an expert and you're right. We incorporate some analytical data into some of the decisions that we make. But I mean, I'd say 90% of the decisions we make is we put the film on and we watch the guy play football. Mm. Like, because at the end of the day, that's what it's about. Like, does the guy play football pretty good? I mean, you're hiring the guy to play football, not look at a bunch of numbers and, you know, and all that. Now, there's a part of that that plays into that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not trying to say like I'm some 1960s, you know, GM here. I get it.
Yeah.
But there's a balance there. And at the end of the day, like, keep coming back to you, put the film on, and is the guy good at playing football? If the guy's good at playing football, then you try to get that guy on your team. If he's on your team and he's good at playing football, his position, then you want to try to keep him around. If he's not, you're going to find somebody to replace him. So whatever the numbers say and the metrics say, you know, at the end of the day, the film and the evaluation of what he actually, how he does his job is probably the most important thing.
It's a good point. Supplementing appropriately.
Absolutely.
Of course,
it's important.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you this question. These are two fairly quick hitters. If I were to ask you what you would have done differently during the time when you entered the NFL up to the point of you becoming a general manager, what would you have done differently that you would share again with rising executives that you might have adjusted in your approach?
Well, I probably wouldn't have scheduled that school call at Jackson State after the 7 p.m. practice at Columbia, South Carolina, when Lou Holtz was walking, you know, driving around on the golf cart smoking a pipe. And then we finished at 8 and I had to drive 6 hours to watch a corner that couldn't play. Right. Probably would not have done that.
Okay, that's good. That's good advice.
But, you know, it's, you know, I don't know, T. I mean, I felt like there were tough times that I went through. Mm. I felt like that, you know, things happened for a reason for us there. In New England, you know, we hired in there at the same time. You know, yeah. You as a national scout, me as an area scout. I was just trying to figure it out because I was a football coach. Mm-hmm. And you know, I ascended to your role when you mm-hmm. were the college director after, you know, Larry Cook had kind of stepped aside and took mm-hmm. on a kind of a consultant role and learned a lot from you and then was afforded, you know, the thing about New England is we weren't really exposed to, you know, I term it generally managing the football team. We weren't exposed to that in our college director role. We just, that wasn't our role. That's not how Bill had it set up. It's not how Scott had it set up. Mm-hmm. So it took me leaving and going to Tampa with Jason, mm-hmm. Who first got me in the NFL. He's the one that recommended me to Belichick back when I was at Nicholls State. It took me leaving and seeing him manage the Bucks down there and kind of being his right-hand man to prepare me for, you know, where I'm at now. And I don't know that I've done anything different. I'm sure there's some guys I missed on, which we all did.
We all did, right? I guess when I press on that, I start thinking about myself and I think I would have probably taken some of that free time that I had. And that's not easy to do. You know, when you beat, when you're a road dog, when you have your time off, you need your time off.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
I've been thinking a lot more about developing some of my leadership skills. You and I feel very, very confident with our leadership approach from being an athlete growing up, right?
Yep.
But we've not been professionally trained. That's something that I started realizing. Would I have done some more of that and searched out some, you know, symposiums that would have allowed me to just hone my skills a little bit more so that when I did get into that seat, I might have been a little more prepared. That said, you know how it is. The ones that survive, the ones that thrive, are the ones that have a natural awareness and a natural leadership. And you're always growing and learning, and I do remember that. So let me ask you, the next step. Since day one as a GM, 5 years ago to now, is there anything that you would advise that you might have adjusted or done differently in, during that time, or is that the same answer? You feel like you've moved through your, you know, your world as a GM exactly how you think was the best way to do it?
Oh, that's a great question. It's probably the latter. It certainly hadn't been perfect. You know, obviously the biggest, you know, do-overs for a GM is picking players or,
right,
you know, signing certain guys you wish you hadn't assigned. But, you know, there were some good decisions that we made here too, you know, and there's a lot of people that helped kickstart the, you know, the progress and the success that we've had here. And I'm blessed to have been afforded the opportunity to surround and get the football the way that I think it should run. And Amy empowered me to do that. Mm-hmm. And I gave everybody that was here when I first got here a chance to, and some of them stayed and some of them have gone. And, I know this is what works. It's deeply rooted in New England, mm-hmm, but it's my own flair. I don't want every day to be gray when you walk in the building. Like, we're going to have fun.
Yeah.
Right? And there's going to be days when I walk down the hallway and I'm like a grizzly bear. Some days it's like, stay away from him. And then there's other days where but that's what life is.
That's,
I mean,
life.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Not every day is perfect. But you trust everybody. You lean on people. You empower them to do their job. Mm-hmm. I don't like to micromanage.
No.
Like, mm-hmm, give somebody a task. Don't tell them how to do it. Because if you're going to tell them how to do it, you might as well do it yourself.
Yep.
You know, allow them the creativity to come up with their solution. That's how they learn and grow. That's what, you know, that's what I learned. You know, I took I learned a lot from you running the college department when I was in New England and took over for you when you went to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. But Scott didn't and Nick didn't. They didn't come in there and say, well, you got to do X, Y, and Z. They were like, well, you kind of know how T did it. Like, you know what's got to be done. You do it your way.
Your way, right.
You know?
Yep.
And I'm appreciative of that.
And you instill that in the people that are around you now. Of course, ultimately, the buck stops with you. But to allow them to grow and learn and bring their own flair, I think that's a really, really good point. When I look back and I start thinking about all the things that I would have done differently during my time in 13 years in a GM role, there were times early on, John, where, like, man, those first 2 or 3 years, especially 2 years, man, I was just struggling to keep my head above water. We all were. I call it the way it is. There's a lot going on. And then you start realizing when you get settled in, there's a lot of other things that you want to adjust. I'm saying as the years move on and you start realizing what is right and even more so what is about you, I think that's a really important thing. I look back and I think where my mistakes are, and we could all name so many different little things, some bigger, some small, of course. I look back and I continue to think about, I understand need, and I am a needs-driven person. I think keeping needs in perspective is vital. And if everyone within the building understands, yeah, of course, you can't say that you are not a needs-driven sport because you can't just continue to draft running backs when you have running backs. You have to be smart about it. where I've made my mistakes over the years, and I would say this, whether it was in acquisitions on free agency, John, or draft, it was when I forced that need so much, like we need a pass rusher.
Yep.
And I'll put my hands up here. One of the moves that really bother me is, and I'll share it right now. I mean, it was a move for Vic Beasley. You guys had him here as well as a free agent, but Vic Beasley, and I'm not afraid to say it, he was a fantastic athlete and did so many great things. But in the end, after his top ranking season in 16, when we went to the Super Bowl, he plummeted and he couldn't pull back up. And I missed on that. And that was a big move for us because we were thinking we were going to have pass rushers coming out of our ears for the next years to come. We did the same thing, of course, by picking Tack McKinley. We thought we were going to build. So I look at those, and you know that. You could look across your sheets and think, how would I have done that differently? How would I have done this differently? They're all there for us, right? We have to learn from them. That's important.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, we simplify it down. Like, they've got to be intelligent enough to do their job, comprehend what the job description is going to be, and they got to love football.
Right.
And if they don't love football, it's hard. And if you're really skilled at football and you love football, well, then that's how you get the Pro Bowls. And that's how you become a Hall of Famer, when you really love football and you're willing to do everything you can to be the best football player, and God gave you a ton of talent to play football, well, that's when you get a gold jacket. But there's a lot of guys that play in this league that love ball. They're not getting a gold jacket, but they're going to line up on Sundays and they're going to give you productive snaps because of what they put into the game on a day in and day out basis.
This is a very interesting point. We grew up in the world in New England where I've always felt back in those days when Mike Vrabel and Teddy Bruschi and all those guys that were really good football players, they weren't the elite player and the elite athlete and the elite speed and explosiveness, but they had so much about them intelligence-wise, team makeup-wise, loved the game passion-wise. And again, I go back to saying need was a driving force of some of the mistakes we made. But to your point right there, if the need wasn't matched with the passion, and two of my most egregious mistakes in putting together that team in Atlanta had to do with two people who were wildly talented but did not have the passion. One was a D lineman and one was an O lineman. It's unfortunate when I look back on it, and those are lessons learned for sure. Okay,
we've all made it. I've made it too.
No, we all have. I get that. So let's flip a little bit here and go down another lane. The league has made some very good strides in the diversity and inclusion area. I want your opinion on where you feel the league is, where you feel more specifically the Tennessee Titans are. There's a lot there, but I'd love you to riff a little bit on diversity and inclusion.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important as the dad of two females and a push for, females to be included in pro football. I've been asked, and I'm proud to have been a participant in the Women in Football Symposium in February that the league does, trying to encourage females in operations or coaching or whatever it may be collegiately, to talk with us about careers in the National Football League, and those exposures led to us starting our own internship program named after our owner, the Amy Adams Shrunk Women in Football Program. We had a participant last year, Michael Johnson, who we recently made a full-time employee. She's the first full-time female scouting assistant in our club's history. And we have another candidate that's going to work with us in training camp this year. But I think it's important. There's a lot of qualified people that are passionate about football. If they know enough about football, we can coach them up on the finer points that we're looking for, if they're willing to work hard.
Jay Rob, where do you literally and figuratively stand with regard to life balance, family, not only for yourself, but all of those around you that report to you? What is your approach to that?
I tell them all the time. Like, I don't want to walk in the office and see you dead with the remote in your hand. Like, everybody has a job to do. They know what they have to do. I'm not walking around checking desks and seeing who's there and who's not. Once you get we could stay in the office till there's so much stuff to watch, but you got to get home, because the reason that you come in and do your job is to provide for the ones that are at home. So you got to get home and spend time with them. On Fridays, I kick everybody out of there at 2:30, 3 o'clock, get home, spend the Friday night. Saturdays, you're done at noon, go home. If we're on the road on Sundays, mm-hmm. there's no need for you to come into the office unless you need something to do, spend it with your family. Mm-hmm. And then when we transition out of the season and we get to the spring and, you know, certainly this time, training camp starts July 24th. You don't got to be back in the office July the 20th. The players will be there the 24th. You need to be back in on the 24th. So spend as much time as you can with your family during the offseason as possible.
Are you a reader? Like, do you spend time studying other topics to professionally develop? Or are you just very, very focused on, of course, your family and, of course, building this football team? Is that where your main focus is at this point?
Yeah, I'd say the majority of it is probably the latter, you know, family and the football team. Mm-hmm. You know, I like some of the stuff that Tim Grover has put out. You know, he was Michael Jordan's trainer. He's trained Kobe. And it's... I like to hear him. I'm reading Winning now. I read Relentless. It was a book that he did. And it's really more about mindset, because the strongest and the most powerful thing in the human body is the mind. And there's a lot of things that you can overcome that you may not be physically able to do, that your mind will allow you to accomplish things. So strengthening the mind and the mindset and how to train that so that you can overcome, you know, some potential deficiencies, either physically or whatever it may be, and still be successful.
That's great. I'll dig into those. I'm in a spot right now where I'm really focusing on a lot of different things, just interested, because we don't have a chance to do it a whole bunch as a general manager.
It's easier to listen to it too, I've found.
It's easier to listen.
They read it to you.
Yeah. What is your approach, philosophy, adjustment in life over the last 3 to 5 years have you made that has adjusted and improved your life significantly?
I think the thing that, as a family, you know, obviously the seats that we sit in financially, they're beneficial. And I give more now. We give more as a family. Our oldest daughter has type 1 diabetes. She has alopecia. My wife serves on the JDRF board. We've hosted a gala here in the stadium where we raised almost $2 million. Our school they go to a private school where, you know, they have to raise money, and we give to that above the tuition, so that the kids and the education and future generations, the kids that come through that school, are provided the same opportunity, because I see how much time, you know, those teachers spend helping my kids. I want them to have the facilities to continue to better future generations of kids. I want to try to help find a cure for diabetes so my daughter doesn't have to wear an insulin pump.
Well, obviously you're a major asset to the football program and the city from a sports standpoint, but also from a philanthropic standpoint. It's beyond admirable. I appreciate that, because it's not always easy to do when you have a job like you have. The last question I have, and I ask everyone, what is the one question that you feared that I was going to ask? In parens, you don't have to answer the question.
Maybe did the new J-Rob eat the old J-Rob? I mean, the job puts a little stress on you.
Yeah.
I've got, and I work out, but I also stress eat. And I've got to do a really good job this summer of getting back down, because health is premium. I mean, this guy hadn't gained an ounce in, you know, I don't know how long. He rides bikes for 400 miles and climbs mountains, all that kind of stuff. I mean, look at this behemoth we got behind us.
But, yeah.
That's a bad machine. But no, that's it. You did it. I mean, I appreciate you having me on. This has been fun for me, just to kind of go down memory lane and story tell a little bit, but also, you know, kick around philosophical ideas and ways to grow our profession, ways to grow the sport of football.
All right. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that visit as much as I did, hanging out with J-Rob in Nashville, talking all things football as well as country music. And I mean, that guy owns that city right now. These people really respect and believe in his direction. So great to see him. From there, from Nashville, we are heading north to see our buddy Joe Douglas up in New York Jet land, the general manager of the New York Jets. Joe the gentle giant, I call him sometimes, although he's got a very, very competitive side. I think you'll really enjoy your time and my time with Joe Douglas.
You have been listening to the GM Journey with Thomas Dimitroff. Continue to follow Thomas as he interviews GMs from your favorite NFL teams. The GM Journey has been produced by Alan Kastenbaum, Thomas Dimitroff, and Octagon Entertainment. Don't forget to download and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast from. The GM Journey is distributed by the 8Side Network.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.